The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. This week, part two of our coverage of Seattle HempFest 2018. This was the 27th annual Seattle HempFest. It's the world's largest protestival, with 3 days of music and politics at the largest cannabis convocation in the world. It's held on a long, narrow strip of parkland that's right on the beautiful Puget Sound, always on the third weekend of August. As always, you can find information about HempFest at their website, hempfest.org. Seattle HempFest always brings together some of the best and brightest marijuana activists and reform advocates in the country, and this year was no exception. One of the speakers at this year's HempFest was the writer and journalist Martin Lee. Martin is the co-founder and director of Project CBD, on the web at projectcbd.org. We had a good, wide-ranging conversation late in the afternoon on Saturday. Here's part of that.
Cannabis industry and, you know, the kind of money morality, whatever that means, just sort of dull as far as I'm concerned. I'm not trying to put it all down or anything like that, but it's nice to be reminded that it's not just about that there is a community here and that the efforts to legalize were not driven by financial interests for many, many years. It was driven by concern for human rights, civil rights, social justice. And now the energy for that has been in some ways overtaken by a business thing, which definitely it's bringing it over the line. It's just, you know, every development like this is always fraught with contradictions and, you know, pros and cons. But HempFest reminds you that community is very important, and cannabis as a healing thing, as a healing plant, there's a level at which it's a community building botanical. It draws people together, and that's a part of its healing that is certainly not the forefront of selling this tincture or that spray or this gel cap or whatever, but it's real. It's an important part of it. And people talk about, I've heard, been to conferences where you've got sort of pharma interested in cannabinoids and kind of hybrids of pharma and hemp and then cannabis, and everybody has their own angle on this stuff. But there's something missing from that stuff too. And it's, lost my train there.
Well, I know what you mean. That's the thing I love about this place, and the people doing it. They weren't doing it to try and create the $1 million venue or a brand that they could then market and make a mint. They're doing it because they want to see positive change, and they needed to do something, and mass education. What the heck, draw the people in with music and hit them up with the politics and throw in some science and just give them knowledge. But you got to get the people there somehow. And so these stages really, this is...
As this whole, whatever you call it, a green rush or this whole enthusiasm, particularly around CBD, is driving a lot of that, particularly into more mainstream. You can get CBD products in gas stations and food markets, and it's completely outside the dispensary system in that way too. It's just jumped the whole boundaries, so this is happening big time, there's a kind of a cockiness on the part of the pharma folks, and the folks that kind of gonna playing the seams between pharma and over the counter and this and that, and some way around the FDA, and kind of putting together a little bit of this cannabinoid and a little bit of that and a little bit, leaving out the THC if need be, and a very cocky attitude. We're not going to sell this in dispensaries. As if dispensaries are important institutions, not just because you can get weed there, but also because they're community centers. People meet each other there. You know, this is, they're focal points of community, and that's a very important part of what that's all about. It's also community where people who are very sick go and get and benefit from, and are accepted by people who aren't as sick. And everybody, hold on.
It's very true, and it's
so
people don't always want to. The friendly pharmacist is a thing. Is you know that's a nice idea.
I mean, and also there's a sort of a presumption there that when I hear that in some provinces in Canada, pharmacies are going to sell recreational weed. Now, the presumption is that the pharmacist is going to know something about this that a non-pharmacist wouldn't, which is not the case. You know, there's a skill set that there's a niche. Bud tending is a very honorable position. They should be paid better so that they have more loyalty and stay, and that money should be invested in educating bud tenders more and so forth. And you don't have to be a pharmacist to be a good conveyor of cannabis medicine. Just know what your limits are. I mean, don't pretend to be something you're not. But, as a group, pharmacy world has not been all that impressed. What, GW Pharmacy, you're going to... They shouldn't be selling weed at pharmacies. Selling Epidiolex? No problem. Maybe even some of these other hemp products, if they could ever regulate them, which is what they really need to do. You know, the CBD stuff is busting at the seams. Our main concern is, can we regulate this somewhat so that maybe we know it's safe and properly labeled? That's the only thing I'd like to see at this point. You know, in addition to easy access, which is already there, if you can get it at the, you know, at every gas station in America, practically, you get this stuff, this CBD products. And in in the Midwest, in the dispensaries, even in the, you'd expect better. CBD products in dispensaries are the gummies melted down, CBD isolate injected into it, and then reformed into this thing with all the artificial colors, artificial flavors, and a dab of CBD. That's what you get, and wrapped in plastic. Properly labeled as to the contents so you can see corn syrup and everything else, at least that. But it's terrible products. That's what you...
You make it sound really appetizing.
Well, but this is what you get in dispensaries, in medical dispensaries in the Midwest. So, you know, in states where medical marijuana is legal, that... you know, so you got this whole thing going on everywhere. What a mess with CBD. Obviously something we follow very closely. But do you think, way back when Fred Gardner and I first got involved, you know, with the CBD stuff, it was really the two of us as journalists, we realized the potential significance when these strains were discovered in Northern California in 2009, 2010. You know, these interesting CBD rich, as we call them. You know, a lot of CBD, a lot of THC, but a lot of CBD in there. But they weren't high CBD and low THC. They were very, once in a while, that was the anomaly for sure. It was more just CBD was present, and that was very exciting. Not just because, like, wow, maybe this is going to be interesting, you know, in terms of the medicinal applications of cannabis. This is a whole new thing. Or not new thing as so much another door that we need to. Could be very significant for not just the medical marijuana world, but that it could be a break the back of prohibition. That it's really going to be something very, very difficult for the drug war establishment to deal with. CBD is going to like you to them, and it happened. Except, the counter thing is just CBD, no THC, you know, the good cannabinoid versus the bad cannabinoid. But the fact of the matter is CBD has broken through to the point where, even though it's still federally illegal, all the CBD stuff, really, unless it comes from these very, you know, prescribed farm bill, you know, pilot programs, which are not supposed to be all over there. All of it's illegal, and yet it's everywhere. At the community market, at the Whole Foods, at the gas stations, at the massage, sometimes chiropractic, you know. And it's illegal, and it's everywhere. And that's CBD broke through. And the other thing that it's done is reactivated industrial hemp. The reason why industrial hemp is growing in the United States again. And there's no pretense in terms of nobody pretends that CBD is not really what this is all about, the senators from Kentucky pushing this thing. Because it's explicit for biomass, for CBD extraction, it's going to be legal very soon. amazing. So what is it? What's going to happen then? We don't know. But it's a it attests to the power of cannabis as a medicine. And it's kind of a psychological breakthrough, because for people who are outside the cannabis sphere, the idea that it can have health benefits and not get you high, really, you know, very irresistible. That idea is really compelling to a lot of people, and that's okay with me. Because, you know, then in luck they'll learn that they like getting high. But that's another matter. The CBD can be the gateway to THC, I'm convinced. Anyway, no, it's a powerful thing, and really has kind of, our hunches about it were correct, but it's so unleashed the furies that it's way beyond anything now, you know. And it really is driving legalization in a lot of ways, but it's also a cul-de-sac. It's a way of driving legalization over the next step, legalizing industrial hemp. That's huge. And CBD legal in pretty much almost every state now. I mean, there's like two or three holdouts maybe, where it's, and even though it's basically legal everywhere, even de facto, you can get it everywhere except products. So,
one moment.
Yeah, but it's a wild, it's a wild time. It really, really is a sense of the whole situation with cannabis. I mean, it's not like CBD is the be-all and end-all. There was a huge pro-cannabis cultural shift already underway. But CBD came, it kind of punctuated it, catalyzed on another level in both these spheres, for, certainly for industrial hemp coming back, and for medical marijuana, giving it a no discussion, it's real. And it doesn't have to get you high. That's just like, whoa. It's storm, it's unleashed. But it's also, there's money there, a lot of money, and, it's Republican senators, and just the people you'd hate on any other issue. You know, they're the ones leading the chart. You know, but they're going to get it done, this thing. It's a weird thing. I mean, the farm bill on the House side is just god-awful. That's a horrible piece of legislation. That's Trumpian, really hurt the poor, racist. Horrible. And hemp isn't part of that, but it's supposed to be merged with the Senate. I think a hemp is going to go through. That's what it seems like. But who knows what kind of dreck it's going to go through with? I don't know. It's amazing. But it's like, I think it means not like a, oddly enough, it's really a crossing a line, crossing a threshold. And not, because I think the situation is going to stay the same fundamentally, in terms of a lot of confusion, a lot of uncertainty. The DEA will weigh in and schedule CBD. May not schedule it the same way its Epidiolex will be scheduled. We don't know what that's going to be. We don't know what the FDA is going to do. The FDA is, normally it would play a role that if it does what it normally is supposed to do in these situations, it could take out the CBD hemp industry, but you couldn't take it out because it's such a huge consumer demand. All these things are lining up. We're going to see this unfold. It's quite a moment, really, in all this stuff. But, step back. Well, what do we want from this? I mean, in our mind, you want safe access, easy access. I mean, we sort of have easy access now, in a weird way. But you want of high quality, regulated, authenticated, good quality medicine. It has certain standards, and it's tested and confirmed that it's that. That's got to be a part of this. And the hemp industry seems to be very not so comfortable with that idea. Or they get very upset about that part of it. There was a whole big brouhaha in California recently. I don't know if you caught that. A couple of weeks ago, the Department of Health issued a statement about CBD legality. And it's caused an uproar in the hemp world, because basically it said the Cannabis Control Bureau governs the process. The only way you can be a legal CBD product, part of a legal industry in California, you'd be governed by the Cannabis Control Bureau. You have to be grown in California by a licensed grower, manufactured by a licensed producer, the product, distributed by a licensed distributor to a retail outlet or outlets that are licensed. And it's a closed loop system. And that comes along with a set of expectations about the quality of the product and certain quality control measures to make sure there's no hanky-panky with the producers and the labs that they, you know, scratch your back a little. No, it's independent. It's the distributor that has to confirm the what that the label is properly labeled, that the pesticide levels are within, you know. So that's a good thing to have to do that in our opinion. But right now, you don't have that. You just have the government completely abdicating, saying that it's illegal, looking the other way largely, and it's totally unregulated. A lot of the products mislabels, and a lot of products are poor quality, and that's what you have now. So I think it's going to continue like that for a while. They might just sort of let. It's really going to be an interesting to see how the FDA responds to this and what they actually do now that Epidiolex is, you know, from GW has been approved. You know, so there's that big factor too, plus the whole hemp thing and the farm bill. It's got these two major factors that are hanging over the whole topography of medical cannabis, but particularly the CBD part of it, you know. But I think that with the it still could be delayed in terms of what this really means. You know, because there's so many contradictions that if you just legalize hemp the way they define hemp, it's not really workable in the real world. Because if you grow hemp, whatever you're calling it, it's less than 0.3% THC now, that's what it's supposed to be. But you know, in our mind, that's low resin plants, is what hemp is, right? And you extract from that. When you extract, you concentrate it. So anything that's 0.3% THC is going to be more when it's in your oil, along with the CBD is going to be more also. So now,
that's the point of concentration.
But that means, yeah. What they're saying, no, you can't have a product out there that's more than 0.3%. So then you have to take that and change it into another thing where it then meets the standards that
they're bound and determined to make this they're bound and determined, you know, to talk over.
But it's crazy. It's not really enforceable. You know, when we talk about what hemp is growing, even for CBD, you mean hemp, wink, wink. You mean the marijuana hemp that they're growing, and taking it down early. And yeah, a lot of people are growing hemp, wink, wink. It's easier to get the license and da-da-da-da-da. You know, there's all kinds of things going on. But pretty much, so it's 1% THC rather than zero. Does it make a difference? No, not really. It's better for medicine, actually, a little bit. Higher CBD, better plants, but they're not hemp. That's the reality. It means if to end up with a product that qualifies as less than 0.3%, someone has to break federal and state law for that to happen in the process of that. Because they're going to be concentrating it at one point in the process of making this product, they will be federally and state illegal. So, okay, can you deal? Oh, can we have some assurances about that, please? You know, I mean, if that's the reality, and it is. And you know, these in the DEA will do any kind of going to pick around at this thing, you know. I mean, you can expect, I mean, how are they going to schedule CBD? I mean, after the World Health Organization and the Olympic Anti-Doping Agency all give CBD a clean bill of health, what is the DEA going to do? You know, they're under some pressure here, you know.
That was part of my conversation with the journalist and author Martin Lee. Martin is also co-founder and director of Project CBD on the web at projectcbd.org. You're listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. This week, it's part two of our coverage of Seattle Hempfest 2018. I've had the honor of speaking at Seattle Hempfest every year for more than a decade. It's an awesome event. Four stages, nonstop music and speakers, vendors, food. You know, I was born and raised in Iowa, and to me, Hempfest is like a massive state fair, only without the livestock. One of the things I love about Hempfest is that it's like a huge family reunion, bringing together folks from around the country, including many people I know and love and have worked with over the years. And you know, though I have been doing this a very long time, and I am pretty well networked, I still meet new, interesting people every year at Hempfest. This year was no exception. One of the people I had the honor to meet this year was Joelle Puccio. She's a registered nurse and harm reduction advocate. I heard her speaking at the Hemposium stage on a panel about bias against people who use marijuana. Caught up with her afterward and got this interview.
I'm Joelle Puccio. I'm a Bachelor's of Science in Nursing, BSN-RN.
Right on. I didn't get a chance to record your presentation, but you were just here on the Hemposium stage speaking. Could you give us a summary, just sort of summarize what you were talking about?
Well, we touched on a lot of different topics. It was basically about normalization of cannabis use. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about a lot is that in order to normalize cannabis use, we need to normalize true interpretation of the research around cannabis use, particularly with pregnancy and breastfeeding, because what the research tells us and how that gets translated into legal policy as well as hospital policy are two different things, and we're not following the evidence on cannabis or frankly any other drug use either. We grossly over exaggerate the risks of using any substances in pregnancy except for the legal ones, which are by far the most dangerous, and those would be alcohol and tobacco. The other thing that we talked about a little bit was how we need to be intersectional and we need to be strategic with the way that we want to normalize cannabis use, because people who use cannabis are in all kinds of communities. People who use cannabis are the same people that use heroin, and people who use cannabis are the same people that use meth. And if we only want to partner with groups that we like or that are sexy or that we think will help our cause, then that's not true partnership and that's not true intersectionality. We need to partner with everybody in our community, because otherwise we lose the talent of those groups and we lose the capital that we could have if we all join together, and joining together just makes us stronger.
So you're going to be speaking again at one of these other stages shortly. A little less substantive, a little more, what are you hoping that the crowds are going to take away from all you're saying here?
So my next talk is going to be about safer consumption spaces, which are clinics where people can bring their drugs and use drugs, usually injectable drugs, in the presence of a healthcare provider. They provide overdose prevention, safer injection education. They hook people up with healthcare, housing, mental health, all kinds of other services. And there needs to be one in every neighborhood. If you want to see less needles in your alleys and your parks, if you want to have less people dying in your Starbucks bathrooms, then you need to ask for a safer consumption space in your neighborhood. Yes2scs.org.
That is terrific. I'm grateful to you. That's what I've been talking about here too. Any closing thoughts for listeners? And are you on social media at all? Tell us how to find some about the work you're doing.
I, for employment reasons, had to scale back my social media outreach. But I would recommend that people check out nationalperinatal.org. That's where I'm working on the perinatal substance use work group. Also check out National Advocates for Pregnant Women. That's advocatesforpregnantwomen.org. And the Family Law and Cannabis Alliance, flcalliance.org. And those are really good places too if you're expecting or if you're parenting and you have questions about what your rights are and how to protect yourself and your family. You can go there for some resources.
Joelle, thank you so much.
Thanks.
That was my interview with Joelle Puccio. She's a registered nurse and harm reduction advocate who spoke at this year's Seattle Hempfest. Another person I met this year is Professor Michelle Bedard-Gilligan. Professor Bedard-Gilligan is a PhD who teaches at the University of Washington, and she's the principal investigator for something called Project STEP at the UW. STEP stands for Short-Term Exposure for PTSD. I'll let her tell you about it.
So I'm Dr. Michelle Bedard-Gilligan, and I'm assistant professor at the University of Washington in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences.
And you're here at Hempfest talking about Project STEP. Tell me about it.
So Project STEP is a research study that we have going on. It's funded by the National Institute of Drug Abuse. And what it's looking at is it's trying to explore the effects of cannabis on PTSD recovery, so recovery of post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms.
Are you taking in people who are already in some kind of treatment, or are you would it be mostly people who are in some sense self-medicating, or what?
So either or. So we're taking individuals who meet criteria for PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder, so have prominent symptoms that are causing them impairment, and are using cannabis on a regular basis, so daily or near daily. And some folks are using it, you know, under the care of a prescriber. Some people are using it recreationally. It sort of depends. And either is fine. But we're looking for individuals with that co-occurrence, so that PTSD and the regular cannabis use. And what we're looking at is to see how they respond to a PTSD therapy. So we're giving a very brief 6-session therapy. We can give it over the course of 2 weeks, because sessions are pretty close to daily. And we want to see how individuals who have PTSD and are using cannabis in this way respond to that treatment.
Fascinating. I need to ask, would you be monitoring for other drug use? Would other drug therapies sort of create conflicts with your data?
So, yes, we do monitor for other drug use. So we ask people to be stable on prescription medications for 3 months prior to enrolling in the trial, so that we can see, kind of isolate the effects of the cannabis use specifically. Other drug use or other substance use like alcohol or other, you know, recreational substances, sometimes they are accepted, sometimes they're not. It just sort of depends on how often it's being used. And again, we need to isolate the effects of cannabis, so we want to have as clear of a sample as we can in terms of who enrolls in the trial.
Now, would participants have to be residents of Washington, and how would people become involved in the in your trial?
Great question. So you don't have to be a resident of Washington, but you do have to be available to attend therapy sessions, so the treatment sessions. Again, we do about 6 of them, and they're usually scheduled over the course of 2 weeks. And so if someone can come and visit Seattle for 2 weeks and come do therapy here, that's great. They can come from anywhere. But most of our participants are local. And you can find out about our trial by going to our website. So www.uwprojectstep.org. So that's www.uwprojectstep.org.
That was my interview with Professor Michelle Bedard Gilligan from the University of Washington. Dr. Gilligan is the principal investigator with UW's Project STEP, or Short-Term Exposure for PTSD. I met her at Seattle HempFest, where they were looking for volunteers. People interested in Project STEP, maybe interested in becoming a research volunteer, can find out more at their website, uwprojectstep.org. And that's all the time we have this week. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. The URLs to subscribe are on the network homepage at drugtruth.net. The Drug Truth Network is on Facebook. Please give its page a like. Drug War Facts is on Facebook, too. Give its page a like and share it with friends. Remember, knowledge is power. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course, also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.